You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. You know, I've had a sort of run of talking to guests who are taking things we know, familiar things, or an industry that's been around a long time, or a genre that we think, you know, we've got a pretty good grip on it. And these folks are taking that and turning it on its head, which is just right up my alley. I mean, I love that. Let me tell you about today's guest. Sagan Morrow is a multi-passionate creative and productivity strategist who writes polyamorous romantic comedy novels. She shares the behind-the-scenes scoop about her writing journey in the Indie Author Weekly podcast. Drawing on a decade of experience as a freelance writer, Sagan now helps other multi-passionate creatives and solopreneurs save 10 plus hours every single week, maximize productivity based on their personality, and take strategic action to finally achieve their dreamy goals, all without burning out. So I think she's got a lot to teach us here, folks. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Sagan.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Tristan.
I mean, if we have time, because we're here to talk about your books, but you also seem to have a breadth of knowledge of things that basically everyone I know, you know, like so many people in my life are creatives and so many people work for themselves and they're entrepreneurs. And it's a skill set. It's a different skill set. And so we're often sort of wandering around trying to figure it out on our own.
Yes. I mean, the reason why I began teaching about productivity is because I was at this point with my novels where I wanted to write books. And the only way that I could really figure out how to carve out that time and that energy and that space to write books was if I got super, super good at managing my time and energy super well. So it was kind of an interesting way that it sort of just evolved right from there. Yeah. It's definitely something that like so many people face.
Yeah. Because also I think that there are these representations of writing as the very romanticized, right? Very nostalgic of just like something comes over me. I drop everything. I don't need to do any of my regular life things. Like if I have kids or a job or dogs or whatever, and now I'm just going to let it pour out of me for hours, hours. I don't need to sleep hours and hours. And although that could be a process for some people, first of all, it's not sustainable. And that's usually not what it's like. It's way more disciplined. It's like sitting down and writing every day, even when you don't have a thought in your head, even when you end up with five sentences on the page. It's work. It's work as much as it is art.
Yes, it absolutely is. And it's really, you know, so much about developing those skills to figure out ways to enhance our creativity when we aren't feeling in that creative space, right? When we're in that sort of zone of, I committed to working on my book. The only way that I'm actually going to make progress on this project, whatever it might be, the only way to make progress on it is if I'm actually sitting down working on it. Even if I'm not feeling motivated, even if I'm not feeling creative. So then it's all really about how do we make sure that we're really maximizing that and learning how our brains work and what boosts our creativity and what boosts our energy so we can take advantage of that, so we can enjoy the process and continue making progress even when it's hard.
Which is like different for everyone.
Yes, it absolutely is.
Right? Yes. What stimulates one person is not what's going to stimulate another person.
Which is why we never want to copy and paste what other people are doing.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's good to hear from a lot of different writers. Like, what is your schedule? How do you write? Yes. Because there is never going to be one right answer for people.
Yes. And when it comes to writing, when it comes to productivity, when it comes to really anything in our personal lives or our professional lives, I always really encourage clients to get ideas and inspiration and guidance from what they're seeing other people do and then adapt it, right? We want to customize everything to fit our unique situation and really make our own rules in life and in business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we may come back to this. We're supposed to start with your book. Okay, so the thing that sparked my interest about you is that you write polyamorous rom-com novels. And as I said at the top, the romance genre is many things. First of all, the romance genre has been wildly popular and successful for a very, very long time. This is something that sort of mainstream publishing and maybe even like people on the street would consider sort of fluffy and light and not serious and not well written. And meanwhile, you know, this fan base of romance was growing and growing and growing and growing. And you see kind of this evolution, right? So all of a sudden we're seeing people addressing race and sexual orientation and diversity and class and, you know, everything they said about romance or everything people think about romance, that it's just like a puff piece. They haven't read the current roster, right? They haven't read what's actually going on in romance, which is a shame, because I feel like we can't just stick to this one idea that it's super heterosexual and super monogamous and super sort of like man takes woman. Because those stories are there, and those can be hot stories, but it's become a much broader genre and a much bigger field. It's more creative, it's more diverse. There are so many different kinds of voices now in romance than perhaps there once were. And yet, I don't know a lot of people writing polyamorous rom-coms. So first I want to say, like, are you one of the only ones? Are there more? Because this seems like a sort of next step.
Yes, there don't seem to be that many people who are doing this kind of thing, which is a big part of the reason for why I wanted to do it, because I love reading romantic comedies. I love watching romantic comedies in TV shows, movies, this kind of thing. And I really wanted to read books that featured polyamory in that sort of rom-com world, and I couldn't find the books that I wanted to read. So it got to this point where I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to write these books for myself. And it was kind of interesting as well, because what I tend to see, you know, when I was trying to find polyamory represented in the novels that I wanted to read, what I kept finding was that it was only really broadly represented either in erotica or in sci-fi or fantasy, or else it was treated as a very dramatic or dark type of thing, rather than this really lighthearted experience or this contemporary sort of experience. Oftentimes it would be set in a different world, right? It would be like a paranormal type of thing or something like that. And I really love this idea of making polyamory a lot more accessible and really mainstream by centering it in the romantic comedy setting.
Yeah, no, it's so radical. It's like both really fun and also really radical to sort of drop this different relationship style into this very well-established genre, right? Because you definitely, when you're reading the book, I can see the characters, and it's like these folks are totally relatable. They're your friends, they're the people you work with, they're, you know, the people that you meet at a club. I mean, they're all, you know, they're totally relatable. And the polyamory isn't sensationalized. It is a plot point, right? Because there has to be negotiation and there has to be talking, because there are relationships, but it's not this bit, it's not the center. And you slip in these moments of education, right? You do it in a way that's organic. And it helps bring sort of people up to speed who may really be coming to this not knowing anything, right? But it all functions quite well in that rom-com genre. Like I'm ready for a movie. I'm sure you're ready for a movie of one of your books. But you know what I mean? Like I can see it the way that it's kind of almost seamless.
Yeah. And I mean, it was actually really funny because when I first mapped out the idea for the Polyamorous Passions series, I mapped it out as a TV show. I really wanted it to be on screen. And then I was like, what? I'm too impatient for this. I need to get this out there right away because it's going to take way too long to get this on the screen. But yeah, it felt really important for me to.
Okay. It has that feel. I definitely picked up on that feel.
Yeah. But it felt really important to me to like weave polyamory into the plot line as it's just an everyday part of, it can just be part of who we are and part of our daily life. It doesn't need to be this hugely over dramatic experience. It doesn't need to be something that, you know, is a completely other world sort of experience, right? It can just be a regular part of day-to-day life. And it also felt really important to create these books through the lens of the three different characters, Helen, Emma, and Scarlett, who all have different backgrounds, different life goals, and that kind of thing. And polyamory works for all of them, right? Polyamory can be for everyone, for anyone.
Yeah, that's another interesting thing. So it revolves around this couple, Helen and her husband, Ben. And Helen has these two friends. And so Helen has some very specific ideas about how she sort of wants to do polyamory, especially around stuff in public and other people knowing, right? And her friends are, you know, are like, let's go to a sex party, you know, XYZ. So they act as foils, but they also act as, oh, and you could do it this way. Oh, and look how this person does it this way, which I think is really important. Right. So you're not even saying this, like, read this and you will know everything about polyamory.
Yes. It's really about, absolutely making your own rules, applying it, adapting it to your own situation and having fun with it and playing with it. And, you know, especially as we see with the Out of Control book, letting it go in a direction and taking you and going along for the ride, right? Not feeling as though you need to do things in a certain way, and this is the only way that you can possibly do them. Not trying to force yourself to fit into a box, but rather let's see what happens along the way. Let's see where this journey takes us.
Yeah. And in that way, it feels like very much a kind of more modern. That's why it feels so modern, because this is not a sort of straight up fairy tale. There are stumbles, there are hard conversations that have to happen. There's avoiding those hard conversations. You know, there's a lot, right? That's why it does feel modern. It feels like how people interact now. There isn't a sort of sweeping off the feet and into the sunset. Really, that's just not part of the book.
Yes. Yes, I really wanted it to be real and relatable while also having that, you know, underlying romance to it, right? It is a love story, but it's not just about romantic love. It's about platonic love. It's about self-love. It's about all different types of love. And I think that there's so much power in that when we really explore love through all of those different angles.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take our first commercial break, hear from our sponsors who make the show possible. When we come back, Sagan is going to treat us with a little passage from her book, her latest book in the series. So you're going to get to have an idea and a feel for these novels. So stay with us. Don't go away. We'll be back.
Support for Sex Out Loud is provided by Manscaped, who is the best in below-the-waist grooming and hygiene. Manscaped has just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. Yes, people, 4.0. I got mine in the mail and immediately set to work on my pandemic-grown bush. Manscaped engineered the ultimate groin and body trimmer by focusing on intelligent functionality and an incredibly comfortable grooming experience. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. This sleek, well-designed, rechargeable trimmer is the best thing on the market for a cleaner shave, and it's waterproof so you can trim in the shower and not get a mess all over your floor. I respect everyone's right to groom or not to groom, but I admit that my mouth does love shaved sexy parts in it. And let's face it, this product is marketed towards men, but in the interest of gender expansiveness, we all scape. Anyone can groom their pubes. So I've got an exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code Tristan at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free worldwide shipping. Just use the code Tristan at checkout when you go to manscaped.com. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your jewels.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today, I am talking with a multi-passionate creative, an author, Sagan Morrow, and she has written a series of polyamorous rom-coms. The book that I recently read, which I think is the newest, is called Out of Control, and it's book 6 of the Polyamorous Passions series. And Sagan is going to be generous enough to read some from the book so you can get a taste of it.
Yeah. Okay. So we are going to read, I have my paperback right here. So we are going to be reading the very first scene of chapter 1 from Out of Control, which, as you said, is book 6 in the Polyamorous Passion series. Okay. Here we go. Chapter 1. "And how do you feel about taking calculated risks, Ms. Gilbert?" Philip asked, leaning forward in his chair. Helen sat up straighter from where she sat across from him at the conference room table. This was her third and final interview for the regional manager job with Hourglass Agency, the marketing company she had been working at for the past 7 years. If she aced these last few interview questions, she would be promoted to the highest position at their local office. It was the opportunity of a lifetime. This job was one she'd been sure wouldn't be offered to her for at least another 5 years. But when a manager at the head office decided to retire early, it meant that her boss, Jack, was promoted to their role, and as a result, his job was available for the taking. Jack had groomed her for this moment. It was the next big stepping stone in her career, a chance to make a name for herself. Someone else might feel intimidated or nervous in her position, but Helen exuded self-assurance. She knew she was great at her job. She had earned this opportunity. She deserved it. And damn it if she wasn't determined to succeed. Helen looked at the panel of interviewers before her as she considered how to best answer Philip's last question. "How do I feel about calculated risks?" Her mouth twitched in a smile. "Well, let's see. I risked my decade-long relationship with the love of my life last year when I asked him if we could be polyamorous because I believed we'd be able to survive it. How's that for a calculated risk?" And that risk had paid off, too. She and her boyfriend, husband, Helen had to correct herself, after 6 months of marriage, thinking of Ben as her husband was still sometimes surreal, now had a stronger relationship than ever. Ben had agreed, reluctantly at first and then more eagerly, to open their relationship. They had been actively non-monogamous ever since their honeymoon. Yes, when it came right down to it, Helen had no problem taking calculated risks. Hourglass Agency would not be where it is today if Richard Chase had shied away from opening a second, third, and fourth office across the country a decade ago, Helen said, naming their CEO. Our regional office would not have grown by 23% in the past 4 years and exceeded every single income goal the head office gave to us, if not for the calculated risks Jack was willing to take. She glanced over at Jack and gave him a nod of acknowledgement. He beamed back at Helen. It gave her an extra boost of confidence to see the pride her boss had in her, to know that he had recommended her with the highest of praise to take over his job after he was promoted. There was comfort in knowing she had at least one of the interviewers in her corner. Helen addressed the other two interviewers seated beside Jack. And frankly, I would not be sitting across from you today if I had not taken calculated risks over the course of my own career. I've always been a big-picture, long-term thinker, and I have no intentions of changing that anytime soon. She was pleased with the sound of the easy confidence in her own voice. Totally nailing this interview. Obviously. Speaking of change, Jack interjected, I'd like to hear you share your opinion of your own ability to adapt to change in the workplace. Classic Jack, Helen thought to herself wryly. Jack would ask her to analyze her own self-awareness abilities. Judging by the curious expressions on the faces of the other two interviewers, this particular question was not one they had pre-planned. Helen hesitated. She knew honesty was the most important attribute right now, even if it didn't necessarily make her look great. I can change as long as I'm the one in control of the change, would be the most honest assessment. It was her who wanted to transition from a monogamous to a non-monogamous relationship with Ben, after all. Helen wasn't sure that she would have been as amenable to the idea as he was had their positions been reversed. That's not fair, Helen objected silently. Your entire perspective on relationships changed because of Emma. Emma was one of Helen's best friends, and she had been polyamorous for the past couple of years. Seeing how happy Emma was in her relationships with the two men in her life, John and Carlos, had inspired Helen, had made Helen start to ask the hard questions about her own relationship style. How could Helen explain all of this to her interviewers? She felt confident in herself, and she wasn't the kind of person to radically change who she was just because someone else came along. Another person might help her see the world through a different lens, but that was all. Helen always made decisions about herself for herself. At the end of the day, that's what it came down to. That answer would have to be good enough for the panel before her. She crossed her legs and drew her shoulders back, feeling exposed in the lonely chair across the imposing conference table. Helen hated feeling vulnerable. I trust in my abilities, my experience, and my instincts, she said at last. I am not easily swayed by someone trying to convince me otherwise. I have been referred to as a bulldozer now and then, Helen admitted, refusing to let them see her inward wince, but that doesn't mean I'm averse to change. It means that I am self-assured. Jack leaned back in his chair, nodding encouragingly. Can you expand on that? Philip wanted to know. Damn, Helen thought. You can't let me leave it at that. I have a great deal of confidence in the direction Hourglass Agency is taking at present. If other directions presented themselves, I would be willing to explore those options. The interviewers just watched her. Silence, it turned out, was an excellent tool to get an interviewee to talk more. When I first started working here, my perspective on things was very different than it is currently, Helen went on. I believe that everyone's views are important to take into consideration, regardless of their role here, and regardless of whether their perspectives are different from my own. The only way we can continue to grow and improve as a company is if we are willing to adapt. But that doesn't mean we should evaluate each situation as we go through it and be smart about that, about the risks we take. Philip jotted a note down while Melanie, another representative from the head office, asked the final question. I'm glad you mentioned risks again. Circling back around to that topic of taking calculated risks. In any one of the scenarios you named earlier about the risks Hourglass Agency has taken over the years, there was always a possibility it would go downhill. No small measure of luck prevented that from happening. So, let's say you take a risk and it doesn't go as planned. What steps would you take if a calculated risk did not pay off? Helen paused. If Ben said no to opening our relationship, what would I have done? What would I be doing now? Would I have left him, or would I choose a monogamous lifestyle? She never thought it was a real possibility that Ben would say no. Had she? Now that this was their reality, those tough conversations they'd had last year seemed so far away, like it had happened between two different people, rather than her and Ben. Part of what made Helen so confident about asking Ben to open their relationship was her surety in the strength of their love for one another, in the trust she knew he had in her. But she had to admit the other side of it. Helen could survive anything. She was resilient. Even if the worst happened and Ben left her because he couldn't handle it, she would have been able to make it through. Helen was a survivor. "It's called a calculated risk for a reason," Helen replied now, speaking slowly as to not get ahead of her thoughts. "I wouldn't rush into making a decision that would put Hourglass Agency in unnecessary harm's way, or anything we couldn't bounce back from, should things not work out as planned. It's a matter of weighing the pros and cons and exploring all the options available to us. Controlling the risk factors and assessing the situation at hand from all angles prior to making major decisions. And I believe, I know, that Hourglass Agency is resilient enough to handle any untoward negative effects that could arise." Jack, Philip, and Melanie looked at one another, their faces unreadable. "Thanks, Helen," Jack said finally. "We appreciate you coming in today, Ms. Gilbert. You'll hear back from us on Monday, after we've made our decision." So there we go.
Thanks for that. And of course, this inner dialogue that Helen's having is foreshadowing some things that are about to unfold. I love a super control freak, polyamorous person. Because I think people think you can't be a control freak and be polyamorous, but I'm here to say that's not true. So I related to her, and it's interesting because she has this philosophy, right? And it all makes sense in business, and she tries to apply it to her personal life, but then there's human beings with feelings, and it's messy, and some communicate better than others. And so this is like sort of sets us up for, okay, now let's see if all of that actually works when people's feelings and their relationships and love are at risk.
Yes. Yes. She likes having a lot of control over the situation and thinks that she gets to make all of the plans and everyone should just follow her lead completely. And she realizes that that is not the case. Yeah. It was really fun to write Helen because she is that really, really control freak of a character, which is just so different from Emma's character in the first three books, because the series follows each of the three main characters with one trilogy for each character. And with Emma's story in the first three books, she's so much more like laissez-faire, easygoing, let's just see what happens. And so having that sort of contrast of the different types of personalities and navigating polyamory through these different lenses is a lot of fun.
You know, I jumped in at number six and I felt like I got everything I need to know about these characters. So do you feel like people should start at one, or they can start wherever they want?
I really feel like you can start at any book. All of them are specifically written to work as standalones. So if you find that there's one particular part of the story that appeals to you the most, you know, start with that one. What I've heard from a lot of readers is that they might jump in the middle book, right? They might start at book three or book six, and they can still get a very full understanding of the story. And then they just get that much more when they go back and then they read books one through, it's through seven now. We have the seventh book has been recently released. So it's nice that you can pick and choose which books you want to read, or you can just dive in at any point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Let's take another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the politics of writing rom-coms. So stay with us.
Spring has sprung, and now it's your turn. Bring a little sunshine into the bedroom with Dipsy. If you're looking to heat things up, there is a story or stories waiting for you. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. I happen to love it because I love
telling and hearing sex stories. I love dirty talk. These things activate my brain and my desire. There's a diverse lineup of stories with all kinds of gender pairings in all different scenarios. And there's a great feature where you can actually choose the setup you want, and you can get the kind of vibe of the story before you start it. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to Dipsy, D-I-P-S-E-A, stories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. Because pleasure is self-care.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with author Sagan Morrow, who writes the Polyamorous Passions rom-com series. You can get it wherever you get ebooks, like, you know, that giant retailer. We're talking about the sixth book in the series, Out of Control. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that it centers around a married couple, Helen and Ben, and they each have secondary partners. So Helen has a boyfriend named Grant, Ben has a boyfriend named Riley. But the plot revolves around a common and very challenging experience that a lot of non-monogamous people have, which is love. Falling in love with one of your secondary partners. I hear about this all the time. I mean, in the decades that I've spent in non-monogamous communities and also researching my book, this is one of the trickiest things to navigate. Because you can, of course, make an agreement and do something like partnered non-monogamy, where you say, we will have additional partners, but we will not pursue love / commitment / serious. And of course, all these words are like in scare quotes because they mean different things to different people. But in general, we're going to make our primary partner sort of central and the primary love figure. Now, of course, these two have partners that they really like, and they've been with them for a little bit. And at least her husband, Ben, will finally admit that he loves Riley, but Helen's going to hang on to that till the last moment because she's sort of in denial about her feelings for Grant. So my question is, has this happened to you in real life?
Not so much since opening my own relationship with my spouse. I haven't found that, you know, because we haven't put limitations on anything. We haven't put a boundary around you can only like a person up to a certain point and like you can't fall in love, right? We don't have boundaries like that. But when I started to realize that I identify as polyamorous back in 2017, at that point, my spouse and I, we had been together for 7 years already. And when I started to realize that polyamory is how I identify, it occurred to me that I had been in denial about my feelings for other people for years, right? I had crushes on people, and I had just told myself, oh no, that's not a thing. I don't actually like those people, right? I don't actually have feelings for people. So that was definitely an interesting sort of experience to even realize that I just kind of been lying to myself for years and years.
Well, but it makes sense because, again, our society tells us if you love one person, you can't love another person, right? So of course, we try to sort of compartmentalize these things because otherwise they raise all these questions that often people just don't want to examine. I mean, there are monogamous people today walking around who have feelings for other people and are having trouble reconciling them. So it's totally relatable. And also, like, we can't control, like, you know, this is said in the book, and we can't control, you know, who we fall in love with. We there are certain things we can put parameters on. How much time we spend with someone, how much contact we have throughout the week, how many times we see them in a given period of time. But the feelings, I mean, the feelings are the feelings, really.
Yes. And if we try to deny them, then things can really escalate and really just, you know, become a huge, huge problem, as really as Helen discovers, right? If she had been upfront with her feelings and sort of worked through them and addressed them early on, then maybe things would have gone a little bit differently. She wouldn't have had all of this, you know, huge existential crisis and everything, really. And I definitely think that this is something that we all sort of experience. When my spouse and I were opening up our relationship, we really liked this idea of taking this journey and really sort of seeing where will this lead us and, you know, being open to what unfolds. And I do believe that that is a major part of what has made this whole experience really joyful and very low, like very drama free, you know, in my personal life. And so I wanted to play on the problems that people often experience with their relationships while also injecting the playful aspect of it, right? So that was such an important piece of these novels to have like sort of both parts of that.
Okay, so can we discuss my major complaint?
Yes.
That there is not a sex scene between Ben and Riley.
Yes.
Explain okay. yourself. No, because first of all, it's so the fact that like the husband is dating a man is like so casual. It's so casual as to like you have to go back to the page and be like, did she use the wrong pronoun in this? Was this a typo or was wait, what? That's my experience of it anyway. And then I was like, oh, okay. So there's these two guys who are in a relationship, but I see no sex.
Yes. So the casual aspect of it was something that was I really wanted to feature. And there's definitely casual things like that that happen in every single book in the series because so much of it is about just making these total non-issues, right? But one of the other pieces when I was creating the Polyamorous Passion series in the first place, when I first came up with the idea for the series, I knew that it would be a 9-book series following, you know, the story of these three best friends, Emma, Helen, and Scarlett, throughout the entire 9-book series as they each discover polyamory in their own ways. But I knew that I wanted it to be an entire world. I knew that I wanted it to be beyond the 9-book series. So I have whole plans to write, you know, short stories based on some of these side characters that we just get a little taste of. I'm actually in the process right now of writing a modern marriage of convenience small town story that is a spin-off from Polyamorous Passions. So we actually see Helen, Emma, and Scarlett in a couple of the chapters in that book, and otherwise it's about a whole cast of other characters. So part of the fun thing about writing these books has been developing the relationships, like with Ben and Riley. We just see a little taste of them, and I'm excited to explore them further in future books or in a short story and to kind of see what happens with that.
Could they have their own book? Could they have their own book?
They absolutely could have their own book. I will do that okay. for you, Tristan.
I'm here for that. Well, also there's an unrequited there's an attraction in the book that never gets acted on, which is also really sexy. I'm not going to give it away, but that's also really sexy and had me sort of like, what would happen if those two got together? So there's more coming. That's all I need to know. That's all I need to know because I want some gay. I want this to be truly pansexual, right? And because I think that's another aspect of this. You could write a polyamorous series where everyone is straight. I mean, that there are plenty of polyamorous people going around who are straight and whose partners are straight. So I liked that you created this world where already sexual orientation was fluid and complicated. And so, yeah, but now I really need to, I need man on man sex.
Yeah. I'll make it happen for you.
Okay. You know, we don't have a lot of representation of poly and open relationships in the media. So part of what's so radical about this is, again, taking this genre that people are very familiar with and sort of dropping in a polyamorous group of people in a way that then it still feels familiar in some way. That's kind of the Trojan horse of it all. But I wondered, like, how you, first of all, like, if you have an agenda to also educate people as you go along, and then if you do, how do you balance the sort of educational pieces with the entertainment pieces?
Yes, that's a really great question. I definitely found, you know, when it finally occurred to me that in my personal life that I identify as polyamorous, the biggest thing for me that really stood out was the fact that it had taken me so long to realize this about myself. And I realized that a major part of that is because we don't see the polyamorous representation. So I really wanted to be able to write stories that would be more accessible, that would be more sort of mainstream, right, in that sort of romantic comedy genre, so that mm-hmm. I can get the message out there, so that maybe other readers will be able to find these books, they'll be able to recognize themselves in these characters, and they might be able to realize, hey, I don't actually identify as monogamous. I never realized that there were other options. And I've actually had readers reach out to me after reading my books, and they've realize that they identify as polyamorous, and they've come out to their husbands and their boyfriends, and they've had these really great experiences of ending up opening up their relationships or having completely different relationship styles than they had initially planned. So having that educational sort of component was definitely always something that I wanted to include. I also started writing the first book in the series. I published it within a year of realizing that I identify as polyamorous. So while I've been writing these stories, I've also been playing with, I've been learning about polyamory myself, right? So it's been really interesting to write these books while I've been learning about polyamory. In terms of my experiences with polyamory, I mean, I've only been polyamorous since, I've only acted on it since very early 2018, right? Like, it's a pretty recent, I'm like a baby polyamory type of person. So it's been kind of fun to write these stories and to explore, okay, how can I make sure that I don't make this mistake in a relationship? Or what would happen if this happened, right? Like, how would that sort of unfold? So it's almost a way for me to explore what obstacles could arise. How could that be dealt with or worked mm-hmm. through? And how can I almost make these mistakes through my characters in the book so that I don't make the mistakes in real life? So that was part of it as well.
That's very Helen-esque.
Yes. But really, you know, writing these stories has been kind of fun because, you know, taking that sort of balance, like you said, of the humor and the fun and the lightheartedness of the rom-com, trying to balance the story with then having sort of the educational kind of components. I really enjoy doing that a lot with the friendship conversations, right? Having these little bits, these little nuggets of education and information just sort of peppered through maybe a regular conversation or the type of conversation that a group of friends will just have sitting on their, you know, at the bar or on their friend's couch, right? The types of conversations that just come up and sort of inserting a little nugget about polyamory that way in that sort of organic way so that it's just a part of their everyday life so that the reader can get the fun story while also getting a little bit of education about non-monogamy along the way.
It's just such an interesting thing because I think for this is always an ongoing thing for underrepresented minorities, right? I think that everyone grapples with, I just think that like sort of cis, straight, heterosexual white people like don't necessarily have to tell anyone about their identities, right? Because they're like prolific, they're everywhere. We know all about them. They've been, you know, drilled into our heads. And so I feel like this is a thing when you feel like you're representing a minority, it's like, how far do I go in making this accessible to people and fun and entertaining and page turning? But how much also education, because we're in that place, by the way, of polyamory, sort of like where we were, you know, decades ago with gay people, right? You know, the most popular sort of novel and autobiography or memoir at the time, like in the 90s, was the coming out story, right? And you still had to do like a fair bit amount of telling people like how you came to realize you were gay, or then you look back and you realized you were always gay, you know, all those things, right? So we're in that place in polyamory where people still don't know. They don't know much about how it all works, what it all feels like. So I feel like there's this tension of how much am I trying to sort of educate the average person? Because certainly there could be a spillover here from the romance genre, right? People who are into romance can find this book.
Yes.
So you're keeping in the back of your mind, huh? Okay, so what do I want those people to know versus the poly people who come because they're like, I'm so excited, I'm poly and I love romance. And so this is my jam. So I think that's interesting. I think it's an interesting line to kind of walk.
Yes. And I think that it was also really helpful, the fact that I started writing these books so early on in my own polyamory journey, because it gave me that sort of space to consider the fact that I was new to it, and also that I had done a ton of reading, right? Reading your book, reading The Ethical Slut, like reading all of these different types of books, listening to this podcast, right? Like listening to different sorts of resources that were available to me. So I was able to, I think, come at these books through that lens of, this will be fun and enjoyable for people who already are polyamorous and want to see themselves represented. And this will also be very non-threatening for people who are totally new to it, right? Like this won't seem like it's completely coming out of left field. So I'm really looking forward, you know, as I write more books in the coming years, to start writing books from that perspective of, you know, the character has maybe always been polyamorous. This is a total non-issue. Like, they're much farther along in the journey. But there's something really nice about taking mm-hmm. the reader through Emma, Helen, and Scarlett as they discover polyamory and as they sort of play with it and explore it right from the beginning. It's kind of a nice starting point for me as an author, and I think also for my readers.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way to end. And hopefully people will find themselves in these stories. I want to remind people the book is Out of Control, book 6 of the Polyamorous Passions rom-com series. You can get it wherever you buy ebooks. Sagan is online at saganmorrow.com and on Instagram and Twitter at saganlives. Thanks so much for this conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having me. This is wonderful.
So shout out to my engineer and editor, A-Rod at FTC Designs. You can follow him or hire him to produce your podcast at FTC_designs. You can find me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino, although I'm pretty much divested from Facebook. So hit me up on Twitter or Instagram. And until next time, take some time to talk about sex out loud.